A couple weeks ago, the LA Rams became the first team ever to punt away every one of their first eight possessions. It was the worst football game anyone's ever seen. Except for this one. September 27th, 2015, Bears vs. Seahawks. It's a beautiful day in Seattle. On their opening possession, the Bears can't get anything going and they punt. A few minutes later, their next drive stalls and the Bears punt again. After a Seahawks field goal, the Bears suffer another three and out and they punt. In the second quarter, Chicago finally makes it into Seattle territory. Facing a very makeable 4th and 5, they punt again. On their next drive, they tap out around midfield and they punt. It's now the third quarter and the Bears are trailing 13-0. On 4th and 17, they punt. Shortly thereafter, a couple penalties put them at 4th and 24. They punt. As the fourth quarter approaches, Chicago is now down 20-0. Time is running out pretty quickly, and if the Bears want to preserve any realistic chance of winning the game, they absolutely have to score some points on this drive. Close to midfield, they find themselves at 4th and 1. The Bears have very favorable odds if they go for it. They punt. It's the fourth quarter. The Bears now trail 23-0. They punt. 4.5 minutes left in the game. 4th and 5. Punt. It was the last time they would ever have the ball. Game over. The Chicago Bears had 10 God-given possessions on a sunny day, and they decided to punt away every single one of them. It's the only time an NFL team has done that in the last 40 years. It's possibly the only time it's ever happened. But these are only 10 of the 46,377 regular season punts of the 21st century to date. Here are all of them, sorted horizontally by date and vertically by how far upfield the punting team was when they punted. So now you've seen nearly 50,000 punts. Congratulations, and I'm sorry. In order to really understand this data, we're going to have to slice it up from a lot of different angles. There's a lot of responsible, sensible punting hiding in here, but there's also some of the most confounding, cowardly decision-making I have ever seen. This is our quest, to find the saddest punt of the 21st century. We're limiting our search between the years 2000 and 2018 because prior to that, play-by-play data is either incomplete or unreliable. Thankfully, ProFootballReference.com contains mountains of data we can dig through. Now here, I've sliced up these punts by the line to gain, in other words, how many yards the punting team would have needed for a first down. We've got 4th and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, very long and very, very long. In doing this, we can identify a few very broad patterns. For instance, while we see thousands and thousands of punts toward the middle of the field, it totally empties out back here to form a sort of invisible triangle. There's 4th and 5 here at the 6-yard line, but there are 0 4th and 1s. That's because it's logically impossible to have a 4th and 1 inside the 9. And if we look from a certain angle, we can see a very pronounced line right about here. From another angle, it resembles a stepladder. So many punts happen here for very good reason. 4th and 1 from the 34, 4th and 2 from the 33, 4th and 3 from the 32, what do all of these have in common? Well, most of these drives necessarily started at 1st and 10 from the 25, which is exactly where you start after the majority of kickoffs. We can see the footprint of a recent rule change here. Starting in 2015, the ball was placed at the 25-yard line after kickoff touchbacks. Prior to that, it was placed at the 20, which perfectly explains why the line breaks right there. But if you ask me, a lot of the most interesting punts are way up here. Few teams elect to punt within the opponent's 40-yard line, no matter how far away they are from a first down. And of course, nobody would ever punt on 4th and short inside their opponent's 40. Well, almost nobody. Now, an offense can legally punt anywhere on the field they want, but while they punted nearly 50,000 times back here, none of them ever, ever punted past the 20. People who don't watch American football might not know why that is, and actually a lot of people who watch Chart Party don't even really follow sports, so I'm going to take just a minute to explain what punting is. Since I wouldn't want to bore those of you who do understand punting, I'm thoughtfully providing some alternate programming for football fans. Please enjoy. The game of football is all about possessions, in other words, the times that you have the ball. Over the course of a typical football game, you might only have like 12 possessions, so it's very important to try to make the most of each one. Suppose you get the ball here. Your possession has begun and your objective is to get down the field and score. You have four downs or chances to do this. That's a really long way to go though. You're probably going to need more than four tries to get that far. Luckily, football comes with checkpoints. Every 10 yards, your health meter is restored. Suppose it's third down and you've only gotten this far. But don't worry, if you can just make it here, it resets to first down. That applies to every time you manage to get to a first down marker. It resets, and you can resume your journey. But if you can't, that's trouble. If you burn through all four downs and you still can't make it to the line, your possession is over, and the other team gets the ball. If you run out of gas all the way back here, that means your opponent gets the ball here and is a lot closer to scoring than you were. And this is where the punt comes into play. Say it's fourth down and you still have 8 yards to go. Your odds of making it to the line in just one play are not that great. NFL teams only do so about a third of the time. So if you want, you can admit you've lost this battle, cut your losses, and punt. Which is to say, you kick it as far downfield as you possibly can. Your opponent will still get the ball, but instead of getting the ball here, they'll be stuck with it all the way back there. In this 4th and 8 situation, that is almost always what an NFL team ends up doing. When an NFL team gets the ball, it ends up punting more than 43% of the time. A possession ends with a punt far, far more often than it ends with any other kind of outcome. The punt is more likely than the touchdown and field goal combined. Consider that. Pro football is not primarily a game of scoring, it's a game of punting. It's a game of, in a sense, giving up, failing. Punting is often necessary, and often makes the most sense. At the most extreme end of the, well, sometimes you just have to spectrum, we have this one. I watched this happen live. It's very near and dear to me. October 13th, 2013. Down by just a touchdown halfway into the fourth quarter, the Raiders have driven to the 50-yard line. In almost any conceivable scenario, the Raiders should not end this drive with a punt. But first and 10 becomes a first and 20 thanks to a holding penalty, and when they repeat the down, quarterback Terrell Pryor is sacked. It's now 2nd and 32. This is becoming a nightmare scenario for Pryor, who is dealing with some kind of injury on his throwing hand. Arrowhead Stadium is going nuts,
delay a game again,
making it very difficult for the Raiders to communicate. They fail to snap the ball in time and are hit with a delay of game penalty. They're now so far back that the CBS crew had to switch to another camera. It's 2nd and 37. This season, across the NFL, there will be 11,830 second downs, and this will end up being the only one that's this far back. And then, Pryor is sacked again to bring up an absolutely horrifying 3rd and 48, which, after an incompletion, becomes a 4th and 48. Just a couple minutes ago, this punt wasn't even up for consideration. Now it's the only reasonable option. That was a freak occurrence, but the majority of these 46,377 punts were reasonable too. There were tens of thousands of cases in which giving up was actually the right thing to do. Now it's true that in sports this is often the way it goes. NBA players miss more than half their shot attempts. In Major League Baseball, batters fail to get on base more than two-thirds of the time. The difference, though, is that the shooter is trying to hit a shot, and the batter is trying to get on base. A punting football team, on the other hand, passes up the chance to keep driving up the field. It quits trying to advance in the hope of long-term success. It chooses to quit. On average, an NFL team chooses to quit about 5 times a game. It's a very sad sport. So, we know why teams punt. I thought it might be interesting to look at where they punt. On a fourth down, a team has 3 choices, right? They can punt, they can go for it, or they can try a field goal. If the team is deep in their own territory, naturally they'll choose to punt almost all the time. That's the red. Over to the left in green, we see the rare occurrences in which they went for it. They pretty much only do this if they're in desperation mode. But I found one massive exception. This might be the boldest play call I've ever seen in the NFL, if you can call it that. It's November 11th, 2012. The Rams are facing 4th and 4 at their own 10. They're up by a touchdown, and there are only 49 seconds left in the half. This is just about the most obvious punting situation you could ask for, so 22-year-old rookie Johnny Hecker trots out to punt it away from his own end zone. But then, at the last second, the 49ers' Chris Culliver shifts over to try to block the punt, leaving Rodney McLeod wide open. Hecker sees this, and within a 2-second span, he decides to take advantage. McLeod's a defensive player. To this day, it's the only time he's ever been thrown the ball in the NFL. But it works. The Rams pick up 21 yards for a first down. To understand how brazen this is, we have to consider the risk-reward here. Hecker averaged about 46 yards per punt that season. If the Niners were stuck at their own 44 with 40 seconds left and no timeouts, they'd have very little chance of doing anything, and the half would be over. Now, if the Rams were to screw up this fake punt, as teams so often do, it would be a disaster. The Niners would be at the Rams 10 and would be virtually certain to at least kick a field goal. And if the fake punt actually works, what does it even get them? Great, they're at their own 31 with less than a minute left. Predictably, the Rams got absolutely nothing out of this. That first and 10 very quickly melted into a fourth and 14, and the half was over. The Rams took a huge risk to gain pretty much nothing. And that's what they got. Unbelievably enough, the Rams tried this again in the fourth quarter, in the same game, in an even more dire situation. It was 4th and 8 deep in their own territory, and they were losing by 4. Even more unbelievably, it worked again. Johnny Hecker had successfully passed on a fake punt twice in a single game. Now, clearly this was awesome. It was tons of fun. But was it good, smart football? I don't know. Seems like the football gods didn't know what to make of it either, because this game ended in a tie, a result that happens about once every 500 games. Anyway, back to the chart. As you can see, punting is still wildly popular on fourth down, even after crossing the 50-yard line. Now, a few sickos have tried to kick field goals from way out here, but it's still primarily punting territory all the way up until the opponent's 37-yard line, at which point the field goals swoop in. In fact, the only spot on the field at which going for it is the most popular option is all the way up at the 1-yard line. So, a few things stand out to me here. First, the fact that punting from an opponent's 35, 33, even 31 is not unheard of. Several punts have even been attempted from the 20s. We'll visit some of those in greater detail later, but for the moment I want to dwell on this particular horror. See that little guy? Yep, someone actually punted from the opponent's 24. I promise you, there is an explanation. November 12th, 2000. In the final seconds of the third quarter, the Bengals trail the Cowboys 20-6. They've driven all the way to the Dallas 24-yard line and now are facing 4th and 14. Cincinnati badly needs a touchdown, but picking up 14 yards in one play is kind of a tall order. It would be understandable to inch a little closer on the scoreboard by trying a field goal, which is what NFL teams do an overwhelming 80% of the time from this spot on the field. Compounding the stupidness of this punt is the touchback rule, which I should briefly explain for non-football fans. If a punt rolls into the end zone without anyone touching it, it's ruled a touchback, which results in the receiving team getting the ball at the 20-yard line. Now, this is why punters often try to coffin corner a ball, which is to say they aim at the sidelines way back here. If the ball goes out of bounds here, the ball is placed here. The receiving team doesn't have a chance to catch and return it, and afterward, the offense is stuck with terrible field position. That did not happen here. It rolled straight in for a touchback, which effectively made this a 4-yard punt. Down by 14, the Bengals gave up possession so they could move the ball back 4 yards. We don't have film of this, probably because the NFL drove out to the desert and buried it, but a couple of newspaper articles are enough to give us the how and why. A few minutes prior, Bengals punter Daniel Pope had an incident. The snap was high, and by the time Pope was in position to punt, the Cowboys were all over him. Rather than getting off whatever punt he could, he just kind of ran away. Now that informs this decision. This is not a planned punt. The Bengals are, in fact, trying for a field goal, as teams usually do. The guy in charge of taking the snap and holding the field goal is our friend Daniel Pope. The snap is bad. Again, Pope has to stand up just to catch it, rendering a field goal impossible. So in desperation, he squares up and punts. Considering everything, it made sense. And that's the story of the furthest town field punt of the 21st century, if not of all time. For a moment, let's forget what teams do on fourth down and instead just look at where they are on fourth down, because I found something pretty funny. Here are the locations of all 72,394 fourth downs I studied in this sample. The spikes at the team's own 20 and 25-yard lines make sense, because teams so often start their drives there, and all the stagnated drives that go nowhere and end in 4th and 10 just kind of pool up in these spots. But look at all the other spikes, at the 5, 10, 15, not the 30 or 35 so much, but again at the 40, 45, 50, 45, and virtually every other 5-yard marker all the way down the field. They're all clearly pronounced. Why would that be? Why would these spikes be all neatly set along these bold painted lines every 5 yards? I mean, it's not as though teams routinely gain yardage in precise 5 or 10 yard chunks. It is true that a lot of penalties typically move the ball in precise multiples of 5, but these only occur at the rate of 1 every 15 plays or so. And besides, how would that explain all the spikes all the way out here? A team is only commonly anchored to a white bar on the field back here at the 20 or 25. I don't think there are anywhere near enough penalties to ensure that a team would maintain that perfect 5-yard stride for such a long distance. I like my theory better. My theory is that officials and or scorekeepers just enjoy placing the ball like that. They appreciate neatness and order. Officials typically have a little bit of leeway, so if a ball looks like it's somewhere between the 49 and 50, it's called the 50. They see a big solid line on the field and that's where they want to spot the ball. And you know what? Who can blame them? Isn't that adorable? I think that's just adorable. One last thing about that chart from earlier. See this area here? The only part of the field where there's a somewhat balanced confluence of punting, kicking a field goal, and going for it? For our purposes, this part of the field is extremely important. If we unstack the same chart, we see something I find really interesting. Here are those same punt, go for it, and field goal percentages. The three come very close to converging. In particular, if we focus on this slice between the opponent's 38 and 33, the three options are almost perfectly even as they'll get on any slice of the field. This set of data gives us a unique opportunity to see what factors might tip the balance toward one decision or the other, all else being equal. So, let's look at some splits. First, let's see if the decision is influenced by the alphabetical order of the name of the team that's punting. Of course, it doesn't in any meaningful way. Whether your name starts with A through J or K through Z, you're still 32 to 35% as likely to do whatever. We're only looking at this to establish the baseline. More relevant is the time of year. As you can see, teams later in the season get a little more aggressive, kicking field goals slightly less often and going for it slightly more often. This might be because the stakes are much more clear. Now, of course, you should be trying to win these games as often as these games, so this is an irrational approach, but it's easy for me to imagine a 7-6 team playing with more urgency than a 2-2 team. If we drastically narrow the timescale, this sense of urgency becomes even more apparent. In the first half of a game, teams go for it 27% of the time in this situation. This spikes all the way up to 40% in the second half. We can also split it by whether the team in question is winning. This is dramatic, but very predictable. If a team is losing in this situation, they're about twice as likely to go for it. Similar story here. Obviously, if the team is further away from getting a first down, they're a lot less likely to go for it. What I find interesting are the punt and field goal trends. They basically switch places, despite the fact that yards to go are 1,000% irrelevant here. If you're punting or kicking a field goal, whether it's 4th and 1 or 4th and 10, has absolutely nothing to do with anything. Now, this might just be the level of statistical variance we would expect, so maybe it means nothing at all.
You want to know what I think, though? I think that being far away from the first down marker just makes you sad, and people punt when they're sad.
Now, that voodoo aside, of all the splits I found, this one was the most interesting. Look at that. In the aughts, teams opted for a field goal just 23% of the time, but now, in the 2010s, that rate has just about doubled to 45%. There's clearly been a massive shift in behavior this century. Is it because kickers have gotten better at kicking long field goals? I mean, I guess. This decade, from this range, kickers have upped their accuracy from this distance by about 20%, which has been enough of an incentive for teams to try them 73% more often. When they're all laid out like this, you can eyeball the change pretty well, with the field goals in yellow and the punts in red. They're situated horizontally by year and vertically by how far into the game they were. The earlier on in the century you get, the more punts you see. This was especially so in the third and fourth quarters of the game. Take the second half decisions in the 2001 season, for example. They chose to punt 61 times while trying just 10 field goals. There are fewer dots up here, in part because there aren't all that many overtime games, and in part because punting in your opponent's 30s in overtime, a situation in which you're tied and the next score wins, is an unbelievably sad thing to do. This thoughtless behavior, which we saw a few times early in the 21st century, has been just about eradicated. It did pop up once in the 2010s. Well after punting habits had evolved, teams grew more aggressive, and everyone knew better than to punt the ball away in overtime from the opponent's 37. Years later, it presents itself to us as a little red dot, a forgotten, lonely star now surely dead. Who were you? It's our mission to find out. But in order to find the very worst, saddest punts, more factors must be taken into consideration. This is the Surrender Index. Is it a scientific instrument? No, not really. It might incidentally be instructive here and there and dispense some actual wisdom, but primarily this is a tool I built to communicate my disgust. The higher the number the surrender index spits out, the more cowardly the punt is. All 46,377 of these punts will be fed through this formula. Now, four factors will be taken into consideration. First, the punting team's field position. If the team punted with a line of scrimmage at or inside the 40, it's given a base score of 1. This score inches up by 10% per yard as we approach the 50. Once in enemy territory, the pressure intensifies as the multiplier goes up 20% per yard. This gets out of hand very quickly. While punting from the 50 earns a score of just 2.6, it rockets to about 16 if punted from the opponent's 40. 5 yards closer, it's about 40. 5 yards closer than that, it's about 100. At this point, it goes completely out of control. If you punt from the opponent's 24, the site of the furthest downfield punt on record, you're hit with a score of nearly 300 points. This is cruel. It's supposed to be cruel. Second, we look at the distance the team would require for a first down were they to go for it. Punting from further upfield is a little bit more understandable if the team's sitting at fourth and long, right? As such, we offer some leniency here. The further away a team is from a first down, the more the score is diminished. For example, if you punt it on 4th and 10, your surrender index score is reduced by 80%. You can see what this does to the score. Punting way upfield hurts, but punting way upfield on 4th and 5 or 8 or 12 is just a little bit more forgivable. Third, we look at the score differential at the time of the punt. In other words, whether the team is winning, tied, or losing, and if so, by how much. If the punting team is currently winning, we leave the surrender score unchanged. If the game is tied, the score receives a multiplier of 2. If the team is trailing by 9 or more points, in other words, at least 2 scores, the multiplier goes up to 3, because after all, you're losing. If you want to win, you're gonna have to stick your neck out at some point, right? You might wonder what's up with this gap. Well, I saved it for a very, very special multiplier of 4. Because if you're down by just 1 score, and you have a good chance to erase that deficit with a score of your own, you have no business playing it safe. You want to play it safe? Go be a bridge inspector. It's a very important job, and it's apparently what you were born to do. And fourth, we add one more very important multiplier to take the game clock into consideration. This only applies if A, the team is tied or losing at the time of the punt, and B, the game is past halftime. If both these conditions are met, the gears begin to crunch, and the multiplier is up just slightly with each passing second. I'm doing that with this formula. Why? Because it does that. This won't affect the score that much until we approach the end of the third quarter. After about a minute into the fourth quarter, the multiplier doubles, and toward the end of regulation, the multiplier increases to 6. The worst is saved for perhaps the most nauseating sort of punt, the overtime punt. Punt right at the end of overtime, which, believe it or not, has happened, and you're hit with a multiplier of 20. Now, I'm told that episodes of Chart Party are sometimes shown in classrooms. Your algebra teacher, rightly so, is probably sitting there and asking, "What? Why is he doing that? Why would he raise it to the third power? What basis does this have in anything? Where is any of this derived from?" Well, it's derived from my dissatisfaction. It's a reflection of how I feel. I'm misusing algebra to throw a fit. Finally, at my own discretion, I can rule the cowardice of certain punts to be unquantifiable. There are certain uncommon scenarios that the surrender index doesn't account for. Maybe you've made a decision to punt that seems stupid on paper, but makes sense for other reasons. If I determine that something other than a cowardly decision was the primary reason for the punt, I'll hit the button and spare the punt from the judgment of the surrender index. Fair enough? Let's go ahead and throw a couple punts through the wood chipper just to show you how this works. How about that Raiders punt, the one on 4th and 48? Well, the punt was inside the 40, so there's the base score of 1. Since it was way, way past 4th and 10, we give it 80% off. However, they were losing by 1 score when they punted, so we have no choice but to apply the 4 times multiplier. The punt occurred with 5:38 left in the 4th quarter, which necessitates another multiplier of approximately 4.13, leaving us with a surrender score of 3.3. That's slightly higher than most punts got, which I think is appropriate. After all, they did punt while losing in the 4th quarter, but it's not even in the same galaxy of how bad this can get. Let's take another example. Remember this one we talked about, the Bengals punt from the Cowboys 24? Putting this through the surrender index is going to be like throwing a fork in the garbage disposal. To find the field position score, we have to turn the dial all the way up to the opponent's 24, which returns a value of almost 300. It was 4th and 14, though, so we can diminish it by 80%. They were down by 14 points at the time, so that's 2 scores, so we triple it. It occurred 73 seconds into the third quarter, so it receives the very tiny multiplier of 1.00039 and finishes with a surrender score of about 178. Remember, the last one was a 3, but remember also that this was an emergency punt. They didn't plan on doing this, so we can hardly call it a cowardly decision. This is a rare instance in which I'll exercise my right to hit the cancel button. this punt is excused. Two down, 46,375 to go. This is what I was hoping for. Easily identifiable outliers we can name and shame. The vast majority of these punts are very low in this chart. They range from fine to I wouldn't have punted, but it's not a big deal. The obscene content is up here. And because you might be wondering, I calculated the average surrender index score by year, and yes, teams seem to have grown less timid. In 2000, punts averaged a surrender index of about 4, in 2018 it was down to about 2.5. This may be thanks in part to a very well-respected economist named David Romer. One day, Romer was listening to a game on the radio in which a team was 2 yards from the goal line, but decided to kick a field goal instead of going for it. It seems to have irked him so much that he wrote an entire paper on it and published it in 2002. Here's the entire thing. I'll give you a moment to read it. How did you like it? What was your favorite part? My favorite part was this. Quote, at midfield, being within 5 yards of a first down makes going for it, on average, desirable. Even on its 10-yard line, 90 yards from a score, a team within 3 yards of a first down is better off on average going for it. That's too radical even for me, but he's the economist. He studied this intensively, and he knows what he's talking about. This paper was passed around in NFL circles, and while they definitely did not take this specific piece of advice, I think it really might have had something to do with the modest decline in cowardice over the years. But there are always outliers. Of the nearly 50,000 punts assessed by the Surrender Index, 10 stand alone. And here they are. Washington vs. Philadelphia, October 8th, 2000. Washington punts from their opponent's 35 on 4th-and-1, so no discount. The score is tied at 14, and there are about 6 minutes left in the fourth quarter. All that combines for a score of about 313. And remember, the average score for a punt that season was about 4. But the funniest thing about this one isn't even reflected in the score. This punt fell into the end zone for a touchback, which resulted in what was effectively a 15-yard punt. Punts from all the way up here are a bummer, not only because you're giving up the ball with great field position, but because the punt just isn't worth as much. Part of that is because you can only stick your opponent back so far, but the touchback is a major factor here as well. It takes a huge bite. From back here, you can reliably stick your opponent about 40 yards downfield, but once you're near midfield, it starts to deteriorate. In fact, whether teams punt from their own 40 or opponent's 35, the opponent winds up with the ball in basically the same area. That's only a 10-yard difference. Not only are you giving up very good field position, you're getting far less value from your punt. Teams are less likely to punt from out here, but as you can see, it still happens plenty. Even in 2018, we were still doing this. Which brings us to number 9. Cowboys-Texans, the dreaded overtime punt, brought to you by Jason Garrett. His Cowboys were lucky enough to receive the ball in overtime and drove all the way down to the Texans 42 so they could punt on 4th-and-1. That is disgusting. Now, late in the process, I realized I made a calculation error. I failed to account for the fact that as of 2017, overtimes were shortened from 15 minutes to 10 minutes, and since I was inverting time remaining to find time elapsed, overtime punts in these two seasons have slightly inflated surrender index scores. I thought about correcting it, but I hate overtime punting so much that I decided to just leave it there out of spite. That's the number one rule of data journalism. Come in with an agenda and bend the rules however you need to in order to prove your point. Anyway, if we take another look at these champagne bubbles, we can see that 2018 could have been one of the most disciplined years on record, a signifier that the NFL really was getting smarter. It's blemished by this one outlier, so extreme that it just about triples the surrender index of the year's runner-up. Thank you, Cowboys. Naturally, Houston beat Dallas in football that day, just as it always does in everything else. For number 8, we return to the age of nu metal. December 2nd, 2001, Bucks-Bengals. It's another punt from the 35. As you can see, it's a lot further up than number 10, as it was a 4th-and-8 rather than a 4th-and-1. Why the higher surrender index? Again, That's what punting in overtime will do. In this situation, going for it on 4th and 8 isn't the play. Kicking a field goal is, if you have a reliable kicker, as the Bucks do. Martin Gramatica was pretty dependable as far as kickers go. In this situation, he would have needed to hit it with the line of scrimmage at the 35. He'd tried 6 from at least this far out, and hit half of them. If you want to increase the sample a little, you can look at his tries from 30 and beyond. He'd made 17 of 23. If he makes it, you go home with a win right then and there. Seems like your odds of that are slightly better than a coin flip. To punt instead would be to give your opponent the ball in overtime, which is very dangerous, no matter where they get it. They punt it. This is a reminder that winning is only one of your options, and that you don't have to win if you don't want to. At least, not usually. With number 7, we learn that if the fates have decided you're going to win, you will be dragged, kicking and screaming to that win, no matter how much you don't want to. Halloween night, 2013. Dolphins-Bengals. I watched this one on TV as it happened, and it's stuck with me ever since. I mean, what a crummy game. Earlier in the night, it was at least interrupted by trick-or-treaters ringing your doorbell, but by overtime, the kids had all gone home, and there was no one left to save you. The Dolphins received the ball first in overtime. They advanced a few yards and punted. The Bengals took over at their own 25, marched all the way to the Dolphins' 39, ran into 4th and 8, and punted. Bengals take it from their own 14 and reach a 4th and 2 at the Dolphins' 40, punt. Now these days, announcers are a little bit more vocal about overly cautious punting. Just 5 years ago, it was a different world. I'll play the broadcast audio right as the punt team takes the field. Listen to the nonchalance of the announcer and the reaction of the crowd.
Here comes the punting unit.
The angry Floridian mob makes a very good point. This could well have been the best chance the Dolphins would ever get, but apparently those 2 yards were just too scary for them. But fate would deliver them victory, no matter how implausible that victory had to be. When a player with the ball is tackled in his own end zone, the other team gets 2 points. This is known as a safety, and it's pretty rare. It often happens because of a fumble, penalty, block, punt, or in a couple of cases because the player did it on purpose. Excluding those, we're left with the straight-up safety, in which the ball carrier is straight-up tackled in his own end zone. These are very rare. A tackle safety with a line of scrimmage at the 8-yard line or further up. It's only happened 24 times this century, in other words, once every 200 games or so. For it to happen here and now was completely unprecedented. It was a game-winning, walk-off, tackle safety, and it is the only time in NFL history this has ever happened. See what I mean? When the fates decide you're going to win, they lay opportunity at your feet. You can try to overthink or cower your way out of it, but the win will always find you. Sorry, Dolphins. You won. I know it's not what you wanted. Number 6. Oh, look, it's the Bengals again. This one's actually just a few weeks earlier in 2013. In overtime, Cincinnati drives all the way from their own 23 to the Buffalo 37. It's 4th and 5, and their field goal kicker is Mike Nugent, who's made it from this distance the only time he's ever tried. But a 55-yarder is still a pretty long kick. I'll accept that you might not want to try from this distance, so you go for it, right? No? Apparently not. So, let's run through the numbers when we go for it in this situation and when we punt. The Bengals have one of the best offenses in the league this season. They're 6th out of 32 in scoring, but for simplicity's sake, let's just say they're an average team. On average, if a team goes for it on 4th and 5, they're successful 38.7% of the time. So yes, a little worse than a coin flip, but if they make it, they're at least at the 32, if not further. That sets them up really well for a field goal that could win the game for them right then and there. If they fail, well, their opponent likely gets the ball at the 37, and teams who start drives at their own 37 end up scoring 39.2% of the time, so if you go for it with these odds and fail, they take over with almost the same odds themselves. Now, what if they punt? There's always the danger of a touchback, which would put them at their 20 and make this punt basically worthless, but let's stick with the just about ideal scenario, which is what actually happened. They punted and stuck their opponent at the 7. Now you have to dodge a bullet. There's a 22.6% chance a team will score from their own 7. If you avoid that, a team that starts from here and doesn't score still gains about 18 yards on average. If you stop them there, great, they average about 40 yards a punt, which sticks you at your own 35, where you have a 33.9% chance of scoring. So in short, if you punt from here, you're passing up these odds so you can give your opponent a free chance to score and win the game. Even if you stop them, your reward is having worse odds than you have right now. You're trading a better chance for a worse chance while also giving your opponent the ball for no reason. The Bengals chose the second one. They didn't have all this data in front of them, but if you trust your gut, it'd probably tell you to do the same thing I'm telling you. I guess they didn't have guts either. Number 5. Some of the weirdest games I've ever seen have this uncanny habit of showing up in this study, including this one. Steelers-Falcons, 2002. This was a punt very deep into overtime from the opponent's 33. Its sole saving grace is that it was 4th and 12, which keeps this one from flying completely off the charts, but it's a familiar story. For the Steelers, this would have been a 51-yard field goal attempt to win the game. Long, but very makeable. Their kicker, Todd Peterson, had hit 8 of his 18 career attempts from 50 yards out, so almost a coin flip. Instead, they decided to punt to place the Falcons at their own 11. Now, since a missed field goal gives the opponent the ball at the spot of the hold, a miss would put the Falcons at the 36. Teams who start drives from there have about a 36% chance of scoring. At the 11, that only falls to about 21%. That's a difference of just 14%. So, essentially, the Steelers traded a good shot at immediately winning the game just so they could give their opponent the ball with somewhat worse odds, but not that much worse. This was a poor decision. Was it an all-time bad decision? I don't think so, but remember, the surrender index is an expression of my disgust above all else, and I sure do hate it. And so did the Fates, who were so annoyed by this that they went to historic lengths to make sure no one would win this stupid game. See, both the Falcons and the Steelers ended up trying a field goal in this overtime period, and both of them were blocked. That two of them happened back-to-back in the same overtime is just silly. But not as silly as this. At midfield, with the game still tied, the Steelers have 1 second left in overtime to make something happen. They try for the Hail Mary. This almost never works. It's successful 2% of the time. Tommy Maddox heaves it, Plaxico Burress catches it, his foot's in the end zone, but by a matter of inches, the ball barely misses breaking the plane of the goal line. The most confounding overtime in the history of the NFL ends in a tie. The Steelers could have tried a 51-yarder to win, but they didn't, and the Fates abandoned them. Number 4 offers a lesson in recognizing, or failing to recognize, when your moment has arrived. December 26, 2010. With 5:43 left in the game, the Jets punt on 4th and 6 at the Bears 35, but the score makes this one especially nauseating. The Jets are losing at the time of the punt. They're down by just 4 points, which earns them the rare multiplier of 4. But this is another one of those punts that is actually sadder than the surrender index would indicate. Losing late in the game ought to light a fire under you, but somehow the Jets decided they had the luxury of waiting for something easier to come around. They did not. A couple minutes after punting this one away, they got it back and ended up with a 4th and 5 back here. Essentially, they traded having the ball at the Bears 35 for having the ball at their own 45, a loss of 20 yards. That was a mistake, but mistakes happen. This is their chance to make up for it. A very makeable 4th and 5 around midfield. Remember, there are only about 3 minutes left, and they're still losing. They punt again. The Jets are behaving like a team that has the lead. Ultimately, their reward for this extreme risk aversion is one final chance. Way back at their own 28, with a minute left and no timeouts. It's hopeless. The drive goes nowhere, and the Jets lose. They just kept trading their way out of opportunities until they had nothing left. They'd never get it that good again. It's poetic. Though the Jets would still make the playoffs that season, their time among the NFL's elite was about to come to an end. 8 years later, they still haven't been back to the postseason. They'd never get it that good again. Our next punt is only third highest on the index, but personally it might be the one that makes me the very saddest. Bills-Colts, December 10th, 2017. The surrender index has now entered the 400s, largely because it's a 4th and 1 punt that's very late in overtime. See, when you punt with less than 5 minutes remaining in overtime, you're usually expressing something very particular, that you're playing for a tie, or at least you'd be okay with a tie. That's because there's a very solid chance you'll never get the ball back, or if you do, you won't have enough time to do anything with it. Now, these bars represent field position as well as the distance to the first down marker. So, for instance, these poor fellas were facing 4th and 13 at their own 2. Depending on other factors, I might actually still go for it here, as crazy as that sounds, but punting's still very understandable. Now, if you're around midfield with 4th and 5 and you actually want to win the game instead of tying, I don't agree with these punts. I think you have to go for it. But this Bills punt, there has never been anything else like it. Unlike their neighbors, who faced 4th and long, the Bears are sitting at 4th and 1. Now, when NFL teams go for it on 4th-and-1, they're successful about 65% of the time. The Bills, however, have someone the average NFL team does not, LeSean McCoy. Their star running back is the only component of their offense that's working today. He's gained 129 yards on the ground so far. Of his 28 carries, he's gained at least a yard on 23 of them. Their odds of converting here are very, very good. This punt honestly makes me question whether the Bills are trying to win or not. An unbelievable thing to wonder considering they're in the thick of a playoff race. At 6-6, they're one game away from a wild card spot, but they're stuck in a three-way tie. With only 4 games remaining, they need to separate themselves from the pack in the worst way. A tie game just won't do it. See, for the Bills, this isn't just any playoff spot. Should they pull it off, this would be their first playoff appearance in 18 years. They played through the entire Bush administration, and then the entire Obama administration, without a single postseason appearance. It's the longest active playoff drought, not only in the NFL, but in major American professional sports. This is the city of Buffalo's only pro sports team. Their fans have been sitting in a snowstorm for 3 hours. They desperately need this. After sending out the punt team, Coach Sean McDermott thinks better of it and calls a timeout, and thank goodness, because their opponent, the Colts, have heavily favored the run over the pass, which eats up more time. If they get the ball and string something together, the Bills are done, especially because they spent a timeout just now. On the other hand, this timeout gives McCoy a minute to catch his breath before this crucial 4th-and-1. Things are looking up. Dermott sends out the team. The punt team. Yeah, the Bills called a timeout specifically so they could reconsider this decision, only to punt anyway. Just imagine you're a Bills fan in attendance right now. Your team hasn't been in the playoffs in nearly 20 years, you've sat outside in miserable weather for 3 hours, and you can finally go home. They finally get to the doorstep and they surrender. What do you think they sound like?
Bills fans certainly don't like the call. Bolton Schmidt meantime with a very good punt.
Mm-hmm, that's about right. With number 2, we once again see a punt that's a small symptom of a much larger crisis. Ravens Steelers, October 29th, 2000. This one comes earlier in the game than any other punt we've reviewed so far, as there are still nearly 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter. That's only a multiplier of about 3, so if it still registers a score of 465, it must be really, really bad. It is. But there's a special consideration to be made. The Ravens were losing by 3 points. They had the opportunity to tie the game with a 51-yard field goal. Their kicker, Matt Stover, had made a 51-yarder and a 49-yarder earlier in that game, but it turns out that it was Stover himself who made the decision not to kick. He would have been kicking into the wind, and he didn't like his chances. Kickers like to kick, and if he said it was a bad idea, it made sense to listen to him. I still think they should have went for the first down on 4th-and-6, but I have to acknowledge that this isn't quite as bad as it seems on paper. So, I figured I'd go ahead and hit cancel on this one. But then, I skimmed the rest of the play-by-play and found something very disturbing. On the Ravens' previous possession, they'd punted on 4th-and-3 from the Steelers' 37. The Ravens, while losing in the fourth quarter by just 3 points, punted well inside their opponent's 40 twice in a row. It's as though they were more afraid of risk than they were afraid of losing. It's such a sad way to play football, and if we look at their last few games, we can see what made them so sad. This was the Ravens' 5th consecutive game without a single touchdown. That's tied for the longest such streak in modern NFL history. And it's not as though they didn't come close. In fact, they made it to their opponent's side of the field more than half the time. They just could not score a touchdown. Maybe they just forgot. Maybe they just forgot that if you can make it all the way down to the end of the field, they give you 6 points for that. At any rate, these two punts are very, very special. As you know, this punt has the second highest surrender index on record, but this one has the 17th highest. And remember, that's out of a sample of more than 46,000. You can see how rare this is. The vast majority of punts barely register on the index. To even get a score of 50 is unbelievably rare. To earn a score in the 200s is essentially unheard of. And yet the Ravens achieved this twice in the span of a few minutes. Unreal. So in light of this, never mind. I'm reversing my decision. I'm uncanceling the score. This punt deserves infamy. And finally, here it is. The saddest punt in the world. We'll be right back. This punt was from the opponent's 34-yard line. This punt was on a 4th-and-1. This punt occurred while the team was losing by 1 point. And this punt occurred with 9 minutes and 45 seconds remaining in the fourth quarter. This returns a mammoth surrender index score of 535.86. I didn't notice it at first. Just thought my screen was dirty. It is without peer. No other punt of its era is even remotely like it. Vikings-Lions, October 8th, 2006. It's finally time to talk about the pooch punt. A pooch punt is sort of the inverse of a fake punt. You line up like you're going to go for it or kick a field goal, only to catch your opponent off guard by punting. Believe it or not, there are some cases in which this is not a terrible idea. Take this one, for instance. The Patriots are stuck at 3rd and 32. With basically no hope of picking up the first down, Tom Brady performs the ultra-rare third down punt. The idea here is to surprise the Bills' defense. They didn't plan for a punt, so they don't have a designated punt returner back there to catch it. Because of that, ideally, the ball will bounce all the way down the field and ultimately be more successful than the inevitable fourth down punt would be. Problem is, since it's 3rd and 32, the Bills are playing a prevent defense, so they have guys back there anyway. The ball is caught comfortably, and the Patriots end up with a 32-yard punt, which is probably a little shorter than they would have achieved had they run a play on 3rd down to pick up a few yards and then sent out an actual punter with a stronger leg to kick it. So was it genius? Not really, but it was worth a try. The pooch punt started coming into vogue in the early 2000s. For a time there, it was happening nearly once a week in the NFL. Then one day in 2007, everyone suddenly realized it was stupid, and now it almost never happens anymore. I found what I believe to be every pooch punt of the 21st century, a total of 77. Pooches almost always happen between the 30 and the 35, right along that no man's land in which there's no general consensus on what to do. I've arranged them here from least to most successful in terms of net yardage. In red, you see how far it went, and overlaid in white, you see how far they would have had to go to get to the first down if they went for it. Now, a lot of these pin their opponent inside the 5, as good as they could have hoped for. Even though they chose a punt over a makeable field goal, some of these could be good ideas. But remember, in order to fool your opponent, you have to have a non-punter out there, a place kicker or a quarterback. They aren't exactly marksmen, so plenty of these bounce into the end zone for a touchback and place their opponent at the 20. This is a fun one. On the opening drive of the game, the Bengals, rather than going for it on 4th and 5 or trying a 50-yard field goal, pooch it. It ends up as a touchback, the ball goes to the 20, and the Titans get the ball pretty much for free. Fantastic. But up here is where it gets really funny. These punts were so ineffective that the opponent actually returned the ball past the line of scrimmage, even though the very point of these is to avoid a return. Essentially, they would have been better off just handing their opponent the ball for free. One of these was even returned all the way back for a touchdown. And buddy, they 1,000% deserved it. See, Panthers coach John Fox was seemingly obsessed with the pooch punt. Between 2003 and this point in 2007, he'd had his field goal kicker John Casey pooch it 6 times, all between the opponents 34 and 38. Within this same span, Casey attempted 15 actual field goals, so if he lined up for a field goal at this point on the field, any opponent who did their homework would know to watch out for it. It surprises no one. It doesn't surprise the announcer, who matter-of-factly sees it coming.
Sometimes they will snap it directly to Casey, and they do here, and he pooch punts it.
And it doesn't surprise the Packers' Tremont Williams, who scoops it up and takes it the distance. This is what's known as getting too cute. The Panthers totally had it coming. Throughout the rest of his career, John Casey never pooch punted again. That was in the middle of the 2007 season, right when teams stopped trying to run the pooch. My theory, which I can by no means confirm, is that this single play was such a catastrophe that it single-handedly killed the pooch punt. It's dead. I'm thankful for that. That seems like it would be the saddest punt of all time, right? It's not. Let's look at the scoreboard at the time of these 77 pooch punts. It's relatively uncommon to pooch punt while losing. There are only 24 such instances. So let's take those 24 pooch punts by trailing teams and sort them by the quarter of the game they occurred in and the distance they would have needed for the first down. I hate every single one of these, but the ones sitting in the top half of the chart are relatively understandable. They had 10 or 15 yards to go for the first down, and I guess they didn't feel good about a field goal. These happened on 4th and feasible, but it was in the first half of the game, so they presumably had the luxury of time as they negotiated for field position. One of these punts does not belong. Yeah. A team pooch punted on 4th-and-1 in the fourth quarter while they were losing. They were the Brad Childress 2006 Minnesota Vikings, and they were sitting on the Lions 34. They were trailing by just 1 point. This would have been a 51-yard field goal attempt for Vikings kicker Ryan Longwell. It was a kick he was absolutely capable of. This season he was 1-for-3 out in this territory, but over the course of his career he'd made more often than he'd missed. Was Longwell injured? No, he was not. Was the weather an issue? No, this is in the Metrodome, so they're playing indoors. You're down by 1 point, and you have coin flip odds of taking the lead right now, and if you miss, again, you have 9+ minutes remaining and are totally still in it, even if they take the ball down and score. And your kicker is good at long field goals. His name is Longwell. But okay, we're getting nowhere with this. You don't want to kick a field goal, and that's that. So how about this? How about you go for it? Remember, NFL teams are successful in 4th-and-1 65% of the time. Your running back, Chester Taylor, is 3-for-4 in his career when he gets the ball on 4th-and-1. When your quarterback, Brad Johnson, has thrown on 4th-and-1, he's converted 6 out of 7. And when he's just taken the ball and run a QB sneak up the middle, he's a perfect 11-for-11. He's made it every time. You could call a quarterback sneak, you could hand it off, you could throw it, you could kick a field goal. All of these favor you. Just don't punt. And yet they did. This punt is all alone. 4th-and-1 inside the 35. No other team has ever dared to venture here. Never mind for a moment that they were losing in the fourth quarter. No team in this century, whether winning by 7 or 14 or 31 or in any other situation, has ever punted on 4th-and-1 from this far out. It wasn't smart, it wasn't bold, it wasn't fun, and it wasn't safe. It wasn't anything but the signifier of a loser. This is what losing teams do. Except, they won. That's right. The team that committed the saddest punt in the entire world immediately made a stop, got the ball, kicked a field goal, and added a pick six for good measure. They won 26-17. And that Washington team that punted into the end zone from their opponent's 35? They won. And those Bucks, who wouldn't let Martin Gramatica kick the game winner, they received a miraculous fumble on the very next play that let Gramatica kick this time, and they won. The Dolphins, well, you remember that game-ending safety that literally had never happened before? They won, thanks to that. The Bengals, after their tasteless decision to punt to the Bills, got a stop, benefited from a great punt return that immediately put them into field goal range, and they won. Of course, those Steelers, who wouldn't let their kicker try a 51-yard game winner, escaped judgment thanks to the weirdest overtime ever. They tied. And those Bills, who chose to potentially punt away their playoff chances and keep playing that miserable game in the snow, they ultimately won. Somehow they even made the playoffs. And that Ravens team, who punted deep in enemy territory twice in the fourth quarter when they were losing, the team that week after week couldn't score a touchdown to save their lives, well, obviously they lost. And then they came out of absolutely nowhere to win their next 10 games in a row. And then they got to the Super Bowl and they won the Super Bowl. Yeah, the teams that, according to the Surrender Index, committed the 10 saddest worst punts of the 21st century ended up with a 6-3-1 record. They won twice as often as they lost. So what am I to make of this? These were awful punts. They were, if you ask me, objectively terrible decisions, and yet, ultimately, usually miraculously, they won anyway. What does that mean?
What do you think, buddy? I think we're gonna punt on this one.